Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Well, it sounds like something out of my junior high school history book, a pirate on trial for crimes on the high seas. But there is absolutely nothing romantic about what happened in federal court in New York City yesterday when Abdulwali Musa walked dazed before a slew of photographers and did what anyone who may never before have seen a camera might have done. He smiled.
He looks like he's from junior high.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of all this. He is the only Somali pirate, as you all no doubt know, captured in the hijacking of cargo ship Maersk, Alabama. He was charged with five counts yesterday, including the crime of piracy. So who is he? How old is he? The pirate suspect's age is only one of many, many thorny issues for prosecutors and his defenders. And joining us now right here in the studio is Neil Cortaro, a lawyer with Watson, Farley & Williams and an adjunct associate professor at Columbia's School of International and Public Affairs. Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning.
Nice to have you here. Let's start with the age issue. Why do we care how old this clearly young, under any circumstance, fellow really is?
Well, hopefully, for the prosecutors, he's of the age of majority. If he's not, there are...
Which is 18.
Which would be 18. If he's not, there would be a very real question as to whether or not he could form the underlying intent to commit some of the crimes that he's been accused of. Because Somalia is, of course, a failed state, this isn't a question that may be easily answered. Apparently, his father has come out and claimed that he's born in 1993. The U.S. Attorney's Office has indicated that he may have made statements that, in fact, he's older than that. So that's going to be probably a key issue, and it may be something that's difficult, in fact, to prove.
Well, the judge has now ruled that, in fact, he is 18 and he can stand trial in this courtroom. Is that correct?
Yes, I believe the magistrate judge yesterday made that
So
made that
for the
ruling.
Moment, at least, that's done.
That's correct.
Okay, let's move on to what I just can't wrap my mind around. This is a pirate case. Does anybody really know how to deal with this?
I would say not anymore. It's been a long time since there was a pirate prosecution here in the United States.
How long? Really,
we go back to the 1860s. There are a couple of small cases that involve interesting fact patterns, revolutions and rebellions in Latin America, for example, where there's blockades imposed. And there are issues raised there that are sort of similar to piracy and actually similar to the situation that we have here because these would be insurgencies that have not been recognized. So we have sort of lawless state actors, so somewhat comparable. But the real piracy trials really go back to the 1860s, and the majority of those, in fact, are slavery-related. Not the sort of depredation on the high seas that we typically think of when we think of pirates.
I think of the Barbary pirates. You'll forgive me. It's my only education in piracy, except for Halloween, movies. But it was a romantic sense of things then, that the world was wide open, people could do what they wanted, it was scary, and now, of course, we're in a very different world, and it's terrorism. So, first of all, laws were written, I mean, it was Thomas Jefferson's law, right? I mean, doesn't it go back that far?
Yeah, it goes back, I would say, even further than that. Piracy was a crime that was tried here in the United States prior to independence by the British Vice Admiralty Courts, and that's something that was carried on by U.S. Admiralty Courts post-independence.
And it was a capital crime then?
That's correct, yes. In fact, the statute that makes piracy a crime initially is there's a series of them, but there's one in 1820, the Act of 1820, that specifically criminalizes it and terms the slave trade as piracy as well.
But this is one of those things where maybe the history assists the prosecutors in this particular case. I mean, why is it any different? I mean, it's really no different.
No, I agree.
If it's a capital crime then, it should be a capital crime now. Why, what's the difference?
The only difference is there's been a slight statutory change where the mandatory penalty is no longer death, it's life imprisonment.
And does the fact that Somalia is a lawless state, as you point out, does that change anything in terms of what the defense for this fellow ought to be?
Yes, absolutely. The Barbary pirate case, or cases, there was a series of incidents. One of the things that's interesting about that is that at a certain level, the United States recognized that the pirates sailing from the Barbary Coast were, in fact, armed and flying the flag of the local political entity. And there was even some talk of either the local caliph dead or the American prisoner returned. And the upshot of that is that we recognize those pirates, so to speak, as belligerents and as emissaries, not emissaries, but as agents of a foreign state. That would allow us to do things like treat them as prisoners of war.
Right.
In this particular case, of course, we don't have that. We have literally pirates who are sailing out without any lawful claim of authority and without flying a flag. That's, you know, quite literally the Jolly Roger instead of the flag, a flag belonging to a nation state. And it should be noted that most, if not all, ships are citizens of the state whose flag they fly. By its very act, flying the Jolly Roger or not flying a flag places a ship beyond sovereignty. And that's sort of the international definition.
So how does that change a trial or a punishment?
Well, if we have a belligerent state that we're dealing with, we're going to have one set of rules, and that's going to implicate sort of prisoner of war type doctrines. If we have a non-recognized belligerent, a lawless state actor like a pirate, or one might say a terrorist, at that point, the domestic law of the United States is going to apply, assuming that we can get jurisdiction over this person, and we certainly have jurisdiction over Mr. Moosey.
Hmm. Well, it's
Jolly Roger walking the plank.
What's the doctrine? I'm going back to junior high school. Neil Quartoro is a lawyer at Watson, Farley & Williams, an adjunct professor at Columbia School of International and Public Affairs. Come back when the trial is on, please.
Thank you. I will.
Thank you very much. And for the record, when you were in junior high school, it wasn't the time of the Barbary Pirates. It was long, long after that. Just correcting that for the record.
It's Earth Day, John. You're
yes,
supposed to be
Earth
nice.
Yes, it's Earth Day. What's one poison you won't give up? We got an email from one of you. I will not give up. It's not a question of compliance. It's a question of limited choices. Why do I have to drive when I would prefer public transportation? Why am I forced to burn oil to heat my house while our town won't build wind generators? Fill in the blanks here. Go to your cupboard. I was surprised to find blank in my blank. Fill in those blanks. Call with your poisons, 877-8-MY-TAKE or MyTake at thetakeaway.org. Your takeaway comes from inside the Beltway.
Even the people who actually did torture in the CIA, if they reasonably relied on instructions or legal guidance from the Justice Department, they should not be prosecuted.
Prosecutions or accountability? That's New York Congressman Gerald Nadler, chair of the House Judiciary Subcommittee on the Constitution, Civil Rights, and Civil Liberties, talking about the so-called torture memos. If you missed anything, pick our podcast to go. I'm John Hockenberry.
I'm Lynn Scherr.
This is The Takeaway.
Hey, you got chocolate on my peanut butter.
You got peanut butter on my chocolate.